incorporate a new kind of transparency weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. With just days left of the legislative session in Albany, and lots of legislating yet to be done, we take a deep dive on this moment in New York state governance when Patricio Rubio talks to Dave Lombardo of the Capitol Press Room. That's coming right up. We also check in with the County of Sullivan to learn about its rail trails. But to get started, let's answer a question that many folks in our listening area have probably been asking the last week or so. What's up with Job Corps? A couple weeks ago, the U.S. Labor Department announced it would pause operations at 99 Job Corps centers by the end of June as part of efforts to shrink the federal workforce. But now the federal job training program is receiving a temporary reprieve. On Wednesday, a U.S. District Court judge in New York City blocked the Trump administration from moving forward with plans to suspend the operation of Job Corps centers across the country, including the Delaware Valley Job Corps located in Calicoon, New York, one of the largest employers in Sullivan County. This ruling came after the National Job Corps Association sued the Department of Labor, arguing that only Congress has the authority to dismantle the program. Job Corps offers free residential job training programs for low-income young adults. Calicoon campus hosts 177 students and has about 100 employees. Jennifer Cha works with Adams & Associates, the organization that operates the Delaware Valley Job Corp. Tim Bruno spoke with her live this morning on Radio Chatskill.
On May 29th, we received a termination for convenience, and we were told that they were pausing operations of the Job Corps program. In fact, it was not a pause. It was actually a closure because we were told to immediately stop all of our student training and immediately begin to send our students home and provide a list of any students that will not be gone within a week, and then also to begin processing all property and records and to shutter the facility by 6:30. So it was an intended full closure.
June 30th, 6:30. Interesting detail there that you were told to start sending students home immediately?
That's right. We were told to immediately start sending students home. And in fact, in the original notice, it was no later than Tuesday, June 4th, to submit a list of any students that would not arrive home by June 6th. And what the plan would be to for them to be transported home. Now, nationally in the Job Corps program, about 20% of students are unhoused. We also have students who are aging out of foster care and other unstable living situations, which makes it very difficult on a dime to send all students to a safe place that's permanent to live.
What were the immediate consequences for students at the Delaware Valley Job Corps in Calicoon? Were they sent home?
Indeed. Those that could safely go. We did end up negotiating for that date to get pushed back a week. But many students had safe places to go, but not all.
Are there still students at Delaware Valley Job Corps as of now?
There absolutely are. There are about 100 students at Delaware Valley Job Corps Center right now. Now, on June 3rd, as you said, the temporary restraining order was filed, and it was granted on the 4th. And what that temporary restraining order allowed is it basically said that we immediately were to stop the closure activity and students could return, we started training as well again, and we were to go back to normal operations. And so it allowed for students to return. And so the reverse started happening. Students started returning, moving back in, and training resumed.
You mentioned nationally that some students, a certain percentage, about 20%, I think you said, are unhoused. Were any of those students also impacted here locally? Are there any unhoused students? Or do you know the status of all the students, I guess, to ask here?
Well, we did not send any students away without them having a home of record to go to. But there are certainly students who are housing unstable at the Delaware Valley Center, and they did not leave.
And what about?
And luckily, we were granted the restraining order, and so we did not have to proceed.
Right. And what about staff? I mean, I mentioned that Delaware Valley Center in Calicoon is one of the largest employers in Sullivan County, 100 or 101 staff, I think. How does that impact them? And were those folks sent home, so to speak?
So they were not sent home. Again, fortunately, that restraining order was granted. Now, that's just a temporary restraining order. There will be an injunction hearing on the 17th. Obviously, with the termination for convenience, with the facility to be shuttered by 6:30, you know, there would have to be impact to staff. There are 101 staff there. There had been no impact up by the time we were able to get the temporary restraining order in terms of, you know, employment impact, but certainly impact in terms of, you know, their own instability and first care and concern for the students who they really, you know, pour their hearts and souls into, and then also for their own employment and their own well-being.
It's certainly causing a lot of chaos. What are you hearing from students and staff since the ruling came down for the temporary injunction? Has it eased any concerns, or is it still just unstable or instability there?
Well, it's certainly, you know, it's a reprieve, and it has granted us the relief to breathe, I would say. But the next hearing, which is on June 17th, will certainly give us a much better look at things. So I think that it's a cautiously optimistic moment to breathe, I would say, and certainly for students to come back. With the immediate shutdown that we received, we're a rolling entry and exit program, and so students are all on their own timeline. So there are literally students who may have been scheduled to receive their high school diploma the next week or complete their training or a third-party certification or may have been in the middle of an internship, and these things halted. And so imagine it was right there and it halted. So it did give us the opportunity to come back and, as I said, restart training so that students can continue to pursue those goals they have to build the future that they've really been dreaming of.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the role Job Corps plays in the lives of students who come through the center, the training and career opportunities that are provided that might not otherwise be available to them.
Absolutely. You know, Job Corps is a program that's been around for 60 years. It was started under the Johnson administration as part of his Anti-Poverty Act, and it's designed for low-income youth 16 to 24 at age of entry. And across the country, there are a myriad of trades that students can study and train on in order to go out and build a career for themselves, a livable wage, and a future for their families. We also offer high school diploma and GED courses as well, where students are required to earn a high school diploma because we know that that greatly improves their employment in the future. And so at the Delaware Valley Center, for example, students are studying on 8 trades. They're studying their high school diploma. And then when they graduate, Job Corps as well has a component that works with a student for up to a year after they leave to make sure that that transition out is stable, that they're working, that they have a place to live, and that they're, in fact, launched into their adulthood. This program provides an option for students who don't have many and don't have opportunities stacked up one behind the other. It's dynamic. It provides them the skills they need in order to be job ready and to build careers. And in today's environment, it really fills a gap. Everybody doesn't need to go to college. We need skilled tradespeople in the workforce, and we need a program that supports youth in our community. And on top of all of that, when a student graduates and then they build their career, the tax money that they're going to produce over their lifetime more than will then pay for the next student to go through the program. And so it's a self-supporting program in that way.
What's your message to the students and families and communities that depend on Job Corps programs, especially here at Delaware Valley Job Corps, as I mentioned, one of the largest employers in the county, all those students, and how can the community, you know, support that community?
Absolutely. First of all, Sullivan County, Calicoon has been fantastic in supporting what's been happening and generally is so supportive of the Delaware Valley Center. So first, it's a thank you for all of that. And now, with everything that's happening, the word is write or call your congressperson, your senator. Let them know that Job Corps is important. It's important to your community. It's important to the youth in your community. It has a tremendous economic impact on the community, and that you don't want to see it go away, that you need it.
That's Jennifer Cha of Adams & Associates, the organization that operates the Delaware Valley Job Corps Center in Calicoon, New York, in Sullivan County. A U.S. District Court judge in New York City has blocked the Department of Labor from moving forward with plans to suspend the operations at Job Corps centers across the country. A hearing is scheduled for June 17th. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us, and please do keep us posted on what happens next.
Thank you so much. Save Job Corps.
Thank you, Tim Bruno. Remember, you can hear Tim every weekday morning at 10 on Radio Chatskill, exclusively here on Radio Catskill. Well, as the final days of New York's legislative session wind down in Albany, there's still plenty of unfinished business there between the Assembly and the Senate, between lawmakers and the governor, and between upstate and downstate priorities. There's a lot of stuff to work out. To help us understand what's left to tackle, what's already been accomplished, and what local lawmakers like Assemblymember Paula Kaye of the 100th District and State Senator Peter Oberacker of the 51st District are focused on, Patricio Rubio spoke with Dave Lombardo, host of the Capitol Press Room.
This year, the end of session has been reduced in length because the state budget went much later than usual. This fiscal year is supposed to end March 31st, and we expect that the budget is always going to be a little later than that, but this year the budget wasn't done until early May, and that really ate into the time that state lawmakers would have to pass their bills. The budget is more like the governor's plaything, and the end of session is their time to shine. And with the budget cutting into that, they've had to really respond to this time crunch, and in the Assembly, as you mentioned, they're going to go into overtime. They've already said we're going to stay at least 3 extra days. The Senate, where they're able to move things a little faster, have made no such changes, and they're going to have some lengthy nights this week as they try to move both some major bills as well as those maybe more boring but everyday types of bills that need to get done, like tax extenders, for example, that are set to expire this year and local governments are counting on.
Let's go over some of the bills that sort of stand out to you that they're going to be working on in these last remaining days.
So the most high-profile issue is what's billed as the Medical Aid in Dying Act. This is legislation that would allow terminally ill New Yorkers to end their lives with the help of a physician, something that's been debated in Albany for years now but never came back for a floor vote until this past spring when it got a vote in the Assembly. It wasn't clear whether it was going to ever come up in the Senate, but as we're recording early Monday morning, it appears that the vote is going to happen in the Senate this afternoon and into the early evening. And what remains to be seen is whether Governor Kathy Hochul will actually sign this bill or whether all of this maneuvering and political sacrificing, because this is a controversial issue, will be for naught. Ultimately, though, this has the potential to be the one big issue that does get done here in Albany, because while there are issues that progressive Democrats would like to see addressed, such as prison reform, some environmental bills, I'm skeptical whether any of them get across the finish line at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely crunch time. And let's talk about sort of the federal cuts that would affect the budget. The budget includes triggers for like a federal cuts over $2 billion. How likely is Albany to sort of reconvene mid-year if those cuts actually materialize?
As you said, state lawmakers approved a budget worth more than $250 billion, and it includes some language designed to respond to the likelihood that the money we're banking on from the federal government may not come in the amounts that we're expecting. Because this budget did not make any hard choices. This budget did not proactively respond to the likelihood of cuts by either reducing spending or raising state revenues. And what remains to be seen is how the state government ends up responding. Because theoretically, the state legislature could say, yes, we want to be active partners in responding to whatever cuts that come from Washington, D.C. But my feeling is that the state lawmakers will not necessarily want to own budget cuts, because budget cuts are not popular. And this is one of those times where the governor is likely going to have to be the adult in the room, so to speak. And they'll be the one who is going to lead on these cuts. And that's something we saw in the wake of the Great Recession, with then Governor David Patterson taking the lead on the reduction of spending. And he was not very popular as the result of that. So I'm very curious to see how the legislature and governor take on these different roles in the fall with what's expected to be some challenging fiscal times.
Now, let's take a look at what's in our area, the Assembly 100 District, Paula Kay. You know, her office, and she's been saying online that the office cites strong wins in affordability and safety and the 2025-26 budget. But what's actually heading to her district? It was sort of what remains pending for her district.
So in terms of legislation for Assemblymember Paula Kay, who is a freshman Democrat, I think we need to set our sights realistically low, because as a freshman member, she has much less sway than, say, her predecessor, Aileen Gunther, who was here for, I think, about two decades at the time of her retirement. So she has a bunch of sort of local interest bills, some of which she carries with Republican State Senator Pete Oberacker, whose district overlaps with her. And so far, I think that's probably what she's going to be able to get across the finish line. There's some bills that she carries dealing with private school transportation in Sullivan County. There's a bill dealing with the selling of controlled substances and whether that's bail eligible. Those are two bills that she carries with Senator Oberacker. I am skeptical either of those is going to get across the finish line at this point. What you're going to want to watch out for is her sway in securing some pork spending, if you will. Everyone says member items are dead here in Albany, and that's money that members can steer home to their districts. But that's not quite the case. Much like Frankenstein, they've been resurrected in new forms in terms of what's called bullet aid and other types of appropriations. And in the final days of the legislative session here in Albany, the Assembly will vote on a bunch of resolutions that will include different pots of money that Paula Kay might be able to steer to the 100th Assembly District. So that's something to watch in terms of where she's going to steer some of these resources.
Now, let's talk about, you mentioned Oberacker. Let's look at Senator Oberacker's 51st State Senate District. So what local priorities like that he's looking at, like infrastructure and rural health care, are sort of still unresolved?
Well, if Assemblymember Paula Kay has little influence in the Assembly, Senator Oberacker has even less influence in the state Senate. So he may have dreams of taking on some of the big issues you're talking about, like affordability and some of these more ideological concerns. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to be focused on getting some of those tax extenders and tax creation bills across the finish line. And for example, there's one maybe a little bit outside of your neck of the woods dealing with the city of Oneonta and the authorization of an occupancy tax. There's also one that he does with Paula Kay dealing with the village of Bloomingburg and their efforts to basically handle some delinquent properties and taking over a role from the county. But yeah, I wouldn't expect him to be grabbing too many headlines between now and the end of the legislative session, given that he is a Republican in a body ruled by Democrats.
Let's just take a look at the future here. Tony Delgado has launched a challenge to Governor Kathy Hochul. You know, in his campaign, he's talking about things like universal health care. You know, how might his run for governor sort of reshape legislative alliances or sort of policy in the upcoming year?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up something like universal health care. So a gubernatorial challenge has the potential to shift the agenda of what the incumbent is focusing on. And I think about 2018, and in that year, then incumbent Andrew Cuomo was facing a primary to his far left from Cynthia Nixon. And I think she influenced some of the agenda that he focused on in 2018. He began to approach marijuana in a different light. And I think that there's the potential for Antonio Delgado, if his campaign gains any sort of traction over the next year, because the primary is not till June of 2026, if he gains traction, maybe Governor Hochul will respond on some of the issues that he's focusing on. And I think he's going to run a campaign that is supposed to be, say, the working person's agenda. And this governor has focused a lot on affordability, but maybe she tailors that message to lower income New Yorkers, as opposed to a more broader affordability agenda. But all of that is based on the idea that Antonio Delgado's campaign actually takes off in a meaningful way. If he is just a gnat nipping at her heels, so to speak, then she doesn't have to respond to him. She can go ahead and continue with her agenda as she sees fit. But if he's able to gain traction, if he's able to steer the agenda, if he's able to steer the media narrative, then sure, I think Governor Hochul is going to have to be responsive, but he has a long way to go, many mountains to climb before he's a part of a serious conversation with regards to the gubernatorial election in 2026. Right now, if I'm Governor Kathy Hochul, I'm more concerned with who my potential Republican opponent will be in a general election.
Wrapping up here, well, beyond policy, what do you see gaining momentum as sort of the session wanes down? Could, you know, what sort of everyone sort of is on the agenda for everybody going into this wind down?
Most people's agenda is actually focused farther away than Albany, and it's eyeing New York City. There are a lot of people that have a vested interest and maybe just a purient interest in what's happening with the Democratic primary to be the New York City mayoral nominee, in which former Governor Andrew Cuomo is mounting his political comeback, and right now he's in great position. And I think that is influencing kind of the appetite that Democrats here in the state legislature have to take on a variety of challenges. And I think they are more focused back home for a lot of these members on New York City. So there are some major issues still at play here, like updating the state's temporary disability insurance program, something that's been locked in place with a benefit of $170 a week for more than three decades. That was something that almost got done last year. And I think that's one of the issues on the table for this year that's still at play. There's also an effort to reduce single-use plastic packaging with a very broad, comprehensive bill championed by State Senator Pete Harcum and Assemblymember Deborah Glick. And whether that has the ability to move through the assembly kind of speaks to the bandwidth in that chamber. As, like I said, people are sort of focused on other things, and bringing it back to the beginning, there's only so many days left and so many bills, so many hundreds of bills that they need to get done as a matter of course, that it remains to be seen whether they'll be able to take on some of those bills and issues that are not necessarily a requirement to end the session, such as addressing the temporary disability insurance, such as updating maybe some of the environmental and energy laws, or addressing single-use plastic packaging waste.
It definitely will be interesting to see that interaction if former Governor Cuomo becomes mayor of New York City and has a deal with.
I'm licking my chops. I'm licking my chops for when he has to return to Albany for Tin Cup Day and make the case for his budget and ask the lawmakers for money. Some of them who called for his ouster 4 years ago.
Yeah, definitely will be interesting. David, before we go, is there anything else that we have not touched on you want our listeners to know about some of these the ending days of what's happening in Albany?
I think one thing we should be cognizant of is the fact that 6 months ago, there was a major conversation about prison reform in New York following the death of Robert Brooks at a central New York prison. That conversation has died down to like a whimper. There's efforts by progressives in the legislature and in the criminal justice space to bring it back to life, to give it a stay of execution before the end of the session, so to speak. But it really seems unlikely that there's going to be anything substantive done in that area, short of the governor giving some money for cameras in prisons and authorizing a lower age for prison guards to start, which is something I would not necessarily have predicted 6 months ago, when there seemed to be a lot of momentum for at least something substantive to get done in this space. So it's one of those issues that there was a real swing and a miss for state policymakers.
Well, we're talking to Dave Lombardo, talking about the last days in Albany for lawmakers. Thank you so much for joining me on the program.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Patricio. We do have one more story before we go tonight, because this past weekend, the Sullivan ONW Rail Trail hosted its first ever Roam event. This is a multi-day walking adventure. It promotes Sullivan County's growing outdoor recreation opportunities. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio spoke with Heather Brown, Planning Commissioner for the Sullivan County Division of Planning, Community Development, Environmental Management, and Austin Davis, who is a research analyst for the division.
I think we've been working within the Department of Planning towards the creation of the ONW Rail Trail in Sullivan County for many years now. Upon its completion, the goal is to have 52 miles of continuous ADA compliant trail that is accessible for pedestrians as well as bikes and scooters and whatnot. I think that the whole idea of having the Roam, which was a multi-day hike, is to just host an event, get people out on the trail, really get it publicized, have a great event, and to really just to kind of market that larger segment of trail. Austin Davis, our research analyst, worked very hard along with Heather Jaxey, who unfortunately couldn't be here today. Austin worked very closely with Heather in bringing the Roam to fruition. So I'm going to let him kind of talk about how the weekend actually went.
Sure, Austin. So how did the weekend unfold?
Sunday definitely was a better turnout because the weather worked more in our favor, which was nice. So, yeah, this was the first time that it was being done. It was a good turnout, definitely for Sunday.
Yeah. You mentioned a little bit in the beginning already, but how does this all fit into the sort of the broader rail trail or outdoor recreation development goals in recreation and being getting out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that having events like the Roam, you know, that's really our first multi-day event. The ONW typically has four annual events. We have a litter pluck for National Trails Day. We have the Bow Wow, when people bring their dogs or whatever pets they want to walk out on the trails. We have the Howl, which is our fall Halloween event. And we also have the Snow, which I always want to say the Snow and W, but I've been advised it's just the Snow. But I think that what we're trying to point out with these multi-day events is that as progress is happening on the development of these trails, the contiguous sections of trails, they're getting larger. I know everyone's eagerly awaiting the groundbreaking for the Neversink Crossing, which is the pedestrian bridge over the Neversink in the town of Fallsburg. When that project is completed, that's going to be a 14-mile stretch of contiguous ADA-compliant rail trail over there. And that's huge because that becomes a regionally significant piece of trail. As the trail grows, hopefully so does the reach that we have to people from within the community, from outside the community, our visitors to the county. And it's just, it's a very exciting period right now for the ONW Rail Trail, as well as other initiatives, like you said, to expand trails. And there's just this very strong focus on the free access to these parks and the opportunity to get out and enjoy the Sullivan County Catskills is there for everyone of all ages and all abilities. I can't reiterate the importance of the ADA compliance on the ONW.
Yeah.
There's no excuse. You know, gravity was the enemy of the railroad. And for some people, you know, it's, gravity is their enemy as well. So these are really trails available for users of all ages and all abilities. And we encourage everyone to get out there.
When I first moved up here from the city, you know, I gravitated to the rail trails because as a first sort of first time hiker, just because like it was flat, it was accessible to everyone. And it had to sort of deal with being in, you could be in the woods without being in the woods, if that makes sense. Do you see that as a good thing? Like, you know, like this is a good thing for like first time hikers coming up here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, like part of the Roam too, like why we chose Wardsboro and Tanamamicating is because, you know, we were walking along what was the former part of one of the lines for the former ONW rail bed. So that's what could be prospective trail in the future, you know, so it gives people a good idea of, you know, what could be further developed down the line, you know.
It also lends itself to a real family day out on the trails. You know, we have a lot of folks who are, you know, new parents. Maybe their kids are not quite ready to start walking the trail, but certainly they can push them along in a stroller. So there are certain sections of the trail right now that are paved. I think the most, the one in Hurleyville is the one that people think mostly about. And it's nice because just because you have a new baby and whatnot, you know, doesn't mean that you shouldn't also be able to get kind of out on the trails too. So we want to make sure that the strollers and bikes and, you know, the kids, everyone has the opportunity to kind of go together.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Talking to Heather and Austin from Sullivan County, talking about the O&W Rail Trail and the event that happened this past weekend, the Rome Walking event. So thank you so much for joining us on the program. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patricio. And also thank you, listener, for being here with me tonight. I'm Jason Dole. This has been the Local Edition. You want to stay with us because the Daily is next. This is Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Radio Catskill.